It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolfworth. The day after Election Day, and I admit it, I'm a political junkie. I don't mind getting ads, flyers in the mail. I don't mind watching ads. I don't mind having the news full of politics because it's fun. It's exciting and it's fun. And last night, my kids were all cheering and yelling at the TV as states came in. So we know that President Obama will still be the president. We know that Don Young will still be our representative in the U.S. House of Representatives, as if anybody doubted that for more than 5 seconds. But what we don't know for sure is what our legislature is going to look like, because there are still some races to be settled, and there's still the question about whether that coalition in the state Senate can hold, which has really been the big factor in politics in Alaska for the last few years. So that's our topic today, and we are going to welcome your feedback, interest, thoughts, theories, analysis, whatever, and why you voted the way you did, although we're not going to really be hashing out the position papers. This is the inside baseball. This is for why people won, how they won, what their campaigns were, and how the organization is going to go. And with me is Ralph Samuels, a former member of the Alaska State House of Representatives, a former gubernatorial candidate, knows a lot more about politics than I do. Welcome, Ralph. Thanks for being with me.
And our friend is on his way. He's seconds away, he tells me.
Okay.
And it's nice to be here.
And former Representative Eric Croft is, Ralph was a Republican from Anchorage, Eric a Democrat, and he is coming and will soon be here to provide that point of view.
In the meantime, I'll just tell you what he thinks and trust me on that.
Right. And I am a well-known, or at least well-known in my own mind, Democrat, but I'm here to be the impartial observer and probably won't need to be too much of a referee because these guys are both really nice, but we will try to reflect what Romney and Obama said last night about more civility and more ability to talk and work together as we produce the show. Then the second half, we're going to talk a bit about the federal outlook for Alaska, and we have Senator Begich planning to call in, and Senator Murkowski planning to call in if their schedules work for that. And so that's our plan today, the Alaskan political junkie. And Ralph, the big issue here has been the Senate coalition. We had a 10-10 Senate, and the Democrats were able to make a deal with some Republicans to create a coalition that would essentially have a Republican president, but then some Democrats in key committee chairmanships. And the race has all been about, can that hold, or will the Republicans, after redistricting, be able to take control? Sounds like you are pretty confident that the Republicans are going to be in the driver's seat.
Yeah, I think if you get to, I think they're probably going to get 13, and the one race in West Anchorage is still kind of up in the air. So you've got 13 or 14 firm, and it's a whole lot different. At 10-10, a deal has to be made somewhere, and you could argue that the Republicans should have joined the rural guys, or as it turned out, the very conservative, the social conservatives were kind of on the outs, but all the Democrats were in, so maybe you could have all different ways to cut a deal on who sets the legislative agenda. And that's really what the what it's all about, is who sets the legislative agenda. But with 13 and possibly 14 Republicans, you could see scenarios where maybe the rural guys are in, but you probably aren't going to see the coalition, certainly aren't going to see it the way that it has been the last couple of years when it was 10-10.
Mm-hmm. And but there's always this power thing that goes on.
Personalities involved.
let us form a coalition, and you can be, you know, chair of a finance committee or another mm-hmm. power. Is there a little bit of vulnerability there, assuming that Hollis French wins his race?
There's always that. Even if Senator French doesn't win his race, there's always the chance that different deals get struck. But with 13 or 14 is probably not going to happen. And if you look at some things that happened in the primary, on the Republican side in the primary, that probably even plays into it again, even
mm-hmm.
further. So probably not. The rural guys are, it's a different, I've always described the legislature as four different factions. You know, you got your Chamber of Commerce Republicans, which I would include myself in that mm-hmm. group, your beverage business guy, social conservatives, and it's, people will vote across those lines, but where your passion is in mm-hmm. one of those two. And then on the Democrat side, if you set aside the whole difference between the environmentalists and the union types, that is a bit of a odd dichotomy in the party, is you've got the rural guys, and then you've kind of got the Anchorage more left-leaning ideological guys. And the rural guys are just more practical, and some of them are conservative on issues and liberal on issues, but they're just the most practical people because that's the best way they serve their constituents.
They need to bring home the bacon.
They need things from government that, you know, all of us, you know, people that can be more ideological about it. Nobody cares if I brought home to get Fifth Avenue paved or if I didn't bring it home to get Fifth Avenue paved. Nobody really cared. If Eric or I did those things, nobody really cared. We could afford to be...
We'd brag about it, but nobody really gave
nobody cared. Nobody's going to elect us or unelect us because right. we did
Spinard
that.
Spinard Road.
Yeah. So it's a little different. And you look at the primary of what happened in the Republican side, and I don't see the same type of coalition come together. You might mm-hmm. have one, but I don't see it being the same.
I think that's right. It's
and,
just,
and now Eric Croft is with us.
Did you guys start without me, really?
Yeah, I gave your spiel already. Yeah. Just agree with everything I said.
So Democrats and punctuality. Okay, we got it.
You told me to be here 10 minutes early, so I was here just on time, barely. Yeah, I think 13-7 is probably just one short. You could see it maybe with 8, but I'm just not sure. Unless the 13 really decides to punish its, you know, recalcitrant members, its people that went away. If they're any kind of let's get it back together, I think it can come together. And what you said about the way the caucus, the coalition, was made the enemy in a lot of primaries, that, you know, some people worry about their general elections and some people worry about their primary elections, and that's got to be a real concern for any Republican that wants to be in, particularly an urban district, if they're going to be in a coalition, how they survive the primary next time around.
Right. Yeah, it was brutal. So let's get some of the news out here. We have that West Anchorage Senate seat.
Hollis and Bob.
Senator Hollis French and was challenged by Bob Bell, a former Assembly member. French's district had been changed so that he had more of that southern Sand Lake area, which is more conservative, more Republican-leaning. Bob Bell came on strong, ran a really strong campaign. Now they're separated by a couple hundred votes. Do you think the absentees could turn that one over?
I think they can. I've talked to some folks today that know more about the absentee process than I do, and they can track how many are requested by a supervoting Republican, how many are by a supervoting Democrat, how many use or the undecideds and the nonpartisans. And they say that this is still just a toss-up. Normally, when I looked at it last night and I saw 200 or 250 votes, whatever the spread is, that I thought that Hollis had probably taken it. But I was told this morning that that is not true. There are still a couple of toss-ups,
Eric?
And that is one of them.
Yeah, my understanding is that a 250 lead with 1,200 to go, that's – I mean, if it was 2,000, it'd be definitely in play. And if it was 500, it'd be over and Hollis would be the winner. 1,200 is kind of in between. I think he pulls it out barely. But you know, with 1,200, you have to have a big margin to make up 250. So I think Hollis will win it in a squeaker.
Yeah, interesting. So it's hometown Alaska. It's the political junkie edition on this day after the election, and I've got Yin and Yang in the studio. Oh no, I mean I've got former representatives Ralph Samuels and Eric Croft. And we're interested in your impressions, predictions, speculations. Phone number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email hometown@alaskapublic.org. So that in-town number is 550-8433. And so the other, I think everyone predicted, and I sense that even she realized it, that the Senate race involving Bette Davis and Faircloth that district had been redrawn in a way that Davis couldn't possibly win it, and Faircloth did win it by a large margin. The other one that seemed to be in doubt was Bill Willikowski winning his seat, but he won by a significant margin. Do you guys see any patterns to these races? Was it all really about reapportionment this year?
Well, I mean, that's one of the obvious patterns, right? That Bill, while they changed some of his district, that was a lot of his old district, and they know him and like Bill, and that's fine. And then when you move Bette into Eagle River and Hollis into South Anchorage, you get much different results. Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it. And arguably more to do with reapportionment than with Citizens United and a bunch of corporate money. Though that had a big effect and fight. I think you can explain more from reapportionment than you can from money.
See, yeah. I disagree even on the Citizens United. It is, I've seen some folks come out and just decry that corporations are going to be spending all this money, and organized labor outspent everybody. I mean, by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And you never saw, you know, the Koch brothers coming in or some of these national groups. You just didn't see it. As much as you heard that it was going to happen, I didn't see it happen. You saw some third parties with the Alliance, and there were some, I think there were some with the Family Council on the social side. You saw some of that coming in there, but I didn't see the money. And I agree with Eric that the reapportionment had more to do with it than the last time. And the last mm-hmm. the last time, Eric could probably give a perspective in 2002, that's my first election. And I just thought, wow, I'm in an open seat. They must, like, wow, life is good. I had no idea that it had been drawn, redrawn that way. I thought it was all about me.
And people, I don't think the ordinary voter realizes just how big those district lines are and that how predictable the individual precincts are, that you can really map them out and know pretty well which way they lean. But you brought up the money, and I just wanted to test something out on you guys, which is, and it seems to have been true nationally too, is huge money really rolling around the system, but maybe having less impact. And I wonder if that's maybe because of the changing media landscape. A lot more people getting their entertainment through the computer, not through TV and radio. You know, newspaper less effective, reaching fewer people. Very atomized media landscape, and so maybe money just doesn't work as well as it used to.
I think you can only buy so much, right. Particularly in Alaska. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, you've got cable TV, but it's a small state. You know your guy. Mm-hmm. People know if Ralph's running against Eric, look, here's the deal. Here's who supports Eric. Here's who supports Ralph. Here's what he thinks.
The filing
if you want to meet him, call him at home. They'll come over and have a cup of coffee with you. Mm-hmm. If you're in California, you're never going to meet your guy. You're never going to meet your congressman. You're never going to meet your state local representative. And it's all about the money then. And up here, you can only buy so many ads until it just everything's bought.
Right.
And after a while, you tune it out.
And you're only advertising to this tiny little segment because, as you say, everybody else knows who they're going to vote for as soon as the fight.
Yeah, the hardcore D's are going to vote for Eric. The hardcore R's are going to vote for Ralph. So you're fighting over fewer and fewer and fewer people.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
I think I agree. I think Citizens United was a horrible decision. One of the first initiatives I did was to restore some of our campaign limits that had been doubled, and we took them back. And I think campaign limits help us have a better democracy. But I did not see the huge effect that I dreaded from Citizens United and sort of big corporate spending. I think it's a variation of what Ralph said. The biggest effect of money is when you don't have enough to get your message out. Once you both do, and you're talking about how many, 3 or 4 or 5 times getting your message out, has less and less mm-hmm. of an effect. So money can be critically important if your opponent has enough and you don't to get just you out. But once you and your opponent are both awash in it from both sides, it has less and less of an effect.
And higher on the ticket, social media is a big factor too, because messages just pouring out that way. If you're on Facebook or even email, it's hitting you all the time. Didn't used to happen and doesn't cost much, if anything.
And one fear as a candidate, and really only the last go-round for me as a candidate, you know, as things started to go with more money, is the fear would be is that a third party will come in and start to define me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't have enough money. I'm collecting money at $500 a piece from my big donors and $100 a piece and $50 a piece from friends and people that I twist their arm mm-hmm. hard enough. And so I'm going to raise, you know, $100,000 for a governor's race or $150,000. And if somebody comes in and spends $700,000, they're defining me. And they're mm-hmm. even if they want me to win, now all of a sudden they said Samuels thinks X, Y, and Z about these issues. And I go, well, that's not entirely accurate. I can't fight my what you would consider my friends. Both sides of the aisle, I think, mm-hmm. can potentially face that where the candidate is no longer – he's defined by somebody other than himself. Mm-hmm. And I see that as the problem with Citizens United with the money coming in is the candidate will be, you know – I'm sure that goes on in Alaska. I'm sure it goes on nationwide. There's a wink and a nod on I didn't know this was coming mm-hmm. and all of this other stuff. But the reality is that you can get dwarfed now with your own money. You can get dwarfed by third-party money coming in and defining you as a candidate that you don't really want to be defined
right.
that way.
And we'll see if maybe there's something done about that in this before the next cycle. I wanted to get back to talking about the coalition a little bit. there are two key races in Fairbanks. John Coghill and Joe Thomas, both relatively well-liked senators, were put into the same district. Coghill won that pretty easily.
Yeah.
And after losing that one, really the Democrats could maybe only afford to lose no more, that, maybe one more. And the other one was Pete Kelly and Joe Pasvan. Pretty
we
close.
We can only lose one Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you guys know anything about that race? What's the story between the Kelly and Pasvan race? I had the impression that Joe Pasvan was pretty popular.
I think they're both...
all popular.
Yeah. All very long-term Fairbanksians, which is right. very important in Fairbanks.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
In Anchorage, it's not as much as, my father did this, my grandfather did that. It's like, in Fairbanks, I think it's very important. And in Fairbanks, it is all about the energy. Mm-hmm. Who's going to reduce my energy? And I think they probably took it out on Pasvan by saying, you know what? We gave you, I don't care if it's only 2 years, you didn't fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And with Coghill, I think a lot of it was just redistricting. I mean, and he's very popular. He's a very good friend of mine. I like Joe Thomas. John Coghill is a very good friend of mine, which surprises me to say.
Right. Well, Eric, these districts were redrawn by a predominantly Republican redistricting board. Do you think that the districts were unfair, and would the result have been significantly different if a more down-the-middle plan had been written, or was the redistricting as good as could be expected?
Oh, I think these were created to have this result. But I do agree with Ralph that you had four very popular candidates in there with long-term roots to Fairbanks. I like all four of those guys. I mean, Kelly and Coghill are neat people. And so you can tell this. It can be a story of redistricting, and that's part of the story. It can be a story of energy, as Ralph said. I think it's also just... Where things turned out differently was often because of a huge gaffe by other party. We saw that nationally with, rape miscues and all that. And you just had two very likable, electable people in districts that were intended to go that way. So they go that way. The reason that they wouldn't is if one candidate really falls on their face.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of none of the four really did that. So it went the way it was drawn.
Yeah. So let's get into the impact of this. During the campaign, it's portrayed if the coalition falls, then Governor Parnell will be able to do anything he wants. There'll be no resistance. It'll be a greased pig running through the legislature to do the tax cut for the oil
industry.
It's a
great image, isn't it?
I have the impression that probably we will get an oil tax cut, but you also heard some nuance. I mean, even Bob Bell, if he is a winner, it ended up the campaign saying, well, there has to be incentives built in, which was very much like what the Democrats were saying.
Right.
How do you see this shaping up as we come in?
I'm hopeful that the debate will lead to a much more balanced proposal. A couple of things happened. First of all, this message got out, and it was not you had a lot of the people running against the coalition who, as you talked about, moderated their position. I heard that same Bell ad and thought, that's really interesting. He
must have some polling.
Yeah, that's right. And so I feel like it's the position I support, though, that there should be much more incentives than Parnell's put forward, but that also was the majority position evolving in the election. And then another dynamic is, when you're the House just pushing against the Senate, and the Senate's not doing what you sort of throw anything at them. But if that is broken loose, if you don't have that wall to knock against, then you've got to put a reasonable bill forward, right?
If you think it's really going to pass.
That's right. So sometimes that removing that opposition means, okay, now did we really mean it when we said last time, or do we have to put something that really is balanced here, not just something that's a radical statement of our position to try and shake up the radical mm-hmm. statement of theirs.
But what do you think, Ralph? I mean, I sort of heard scuttlebutt, never saw the polls, that the polls were saying, gee, the voters don't like this. This phrase giveaway scares people, and they're afraid there's going to be a giveaway.
Quite frankly, I think the whole topic the public didn't care about.
Okay.
I see. I think some of it was redistricting, and some of it was this election was about Barack Obama. It wasn't about Joe Pasvan.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It was... You got the wrong letter after your name because the distrust of the federal government with the EPA mm-hmm. regs and all of this things that we love to hate the federal government, and you have the probably in my
even
lifetime
they pay all the bills, right?
We're talking politics, right. Not reality here, Charles. It, if you look at in my lifetime, I was born when Kennedy was president. In my lifetime, I think it's pretty safe to say that until Obama got elected, that LBJ was probably the furthest left president that we had, right? Pretty safe to say. You know, you got Carter and Clinton, mm-hmm. you know, pretty much southern practical mm-hmm. guys, everything, until Obama came along. And I think if you look at Alaska, a lot of it had to do with him being at the top of the ticket to draw out the Republican base. Now, as far as the oil tax bill going through the legislature, I think that the debate should center around, to me, the debate's been in the wrong place. It shouldn't be on oil taxes. It should be in the economy as a whole. What do we do if the oil keeps declining? How do we stop it? What do you do with state spending? What do you do with federal spending? And one piece of that is your tax rate on the oil, so that you have a honest debate on the trouble. And I tend to be pessimistic and you know, not the most optimistic person, long-term economy for Alaska. If the oil continues to decline, what can you do about it? But the debate should be on the economy, not on the tax rate. The tax rate is merely a function of how you try to keep your economy going. Mm-hmm. Does it reach that level in the legislative arena? I don't think so. I tend to agree with Eric also that you'll probably have a more practical, your enemy is gone. You've slayed the dragon now. You know, the Democrats have been eliminated and Eric Croft is, you know, back working for a living and all of these things, that you'll probably have a more practical debate between amongst legislators themselves of both parties, the governor's office, the industry, and the community at large. I think you'll probably have it right now without having the animosity of other issues flowing in.
Yeah, it sure did get hot. My guests today are Eric Croft and Ralph Samuels, both, they don't look that old, but retired members of the House of State House of Representatives. My name is Charles Wolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. And I want to go to a caller now. Caroline, I have on my screen that you have three questions. I thought maybe we could start with one and see how it goes.
Well, I will try. I have combined them since I spoke to the very capable producer you have. Good afternoon, gentlemen. First of all, I wanted to ask if there's any way Alaskans might look at how other states are doing things. I'm thinking of the California style of reapportionment, if that's something that might catch on. And, of course, one of my passions has been clean elections, where that is in place in other states. And Portland, Oregon, which tells you how left-leaning it is, whether or not that might be something that could change in the next number of years, whether bipartisanship at the national level, should that happen, could spill over and perhaps get people in this state to be the way they used to be, as all you folks remember, back in the day when people were friends and yet disagreed on politics. And then the main thing that I do not vote against transportation bills for the most part, ever. But this one I did vote against, and I felt badly for the places that perhaps needed the money. But I took real affront with our mayor's way of signing a document which did not do anything to help the citizens find out about something they're paying for.
All right.
And I didn't want to help that become a precedent by agreeing with a transportation bill, but that's a moot point.
That's a lot to chew on. Let's take it one bite at a time.
I counted four, but maybe I
want to start with we used to have a more the original Alaska Constitution had a more bipartisan kind of system for reapportionment, but it always seemed to end up pretty partisan anyway. I don't know if there's
somebody
a way to do it.
Has to at the end of the day, who appoints the person on there and. You know, I said I got elected in 2002, the first time after the last apportionment that Tony Knowles wrote. So I don't know. I don't know anything about the California system. I don't know if there's a better way. It's frustrating for whoever's not drawing the lines. I get it. But I don't know.
There are judicial systems around the country, but judges, they may not be explicitly political, but everybody's political on some level.
It's hard to find little green non-political men from Mars or whatever who
yes,
can write
exactly.
your lines fairly. It just doesn't exist. I love the clean elections proposals, Caroline. We put it on the ballot, and and the people didn't want to do it. So, no, I don't think that's going to happen. And I thought you said partisanship spilling over from Washington, but I'm trying imagine that
say, well, since
if that happened.
It's going to go the other way.
Yeah.
If Washington becomes less partisan, I don't see much sign of that happening. Even this morning, John Boehner was making some very partisan and tough remarks. So I think they're already off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see that happening. I was hoping that once Obama got reelected, that this idea of that their main goal was stopping that would be moot. But there's gonna be that partisanship. And I think that bond was interesting. I sort of thought it would be closer. I'm not sure why we're bonding with this much cash. Why you need to borrow when you got a big checking account doesn't make any sense to me. And then can you combine it with the real problems the port has been having? I thought it would be more controversial than it was.
I kind of thought it would be too, except that, you know, I'm not sure the concerns that were had by people in Anchorage and who were reading the local media and seeing the local TV really spread around the state. And in general, Alaskans are for infrastructure, you know, and you give them a vote on infrastructure, they'll vote for it.
Particularly, you know, as you said, spread around the state, it was spread, so you can always find something for
what
your
thing. What a shock.
Yeah, that's right.
What a shock.
A Christmas tree. Ralph, how do you feel about it?
You know, I agree with Eric on if you had the cash, do it, and the legislature chose not to do that because they'd already spent $3 billion on other projects going forward.
So they're embarrassed, basically.
Well, let the people choose on some of them.
Okay.
So it and as far as the partisanship goes, you know, it is a fine line between trying to, you know, I hear this morning, like, we need to, the people are calling in for various shows saying we need to work together. And I will tell you, Aircraft is a friend of mine. We don't see the world in the same way on a number of issues that tend to make the headlines. You know, we agree on some things. We agree on, I think, criminal justice issues. We agree on gun rights issues. We disagree on a lot of commerce issues. So it's a fine line when I get elected saying this is who I am and I'm going to go to Juneau. And I go down to Juneau and a commerce issue comes up there. And when do I want to work together with Eric? And when do I say, you know what, I can get the votes to do what I told my constituents I'm going to do. And Eric's in exactly the same place, right? It could be a different issue. It could be on the other side. Maybe he's got the votes to do this or that, the other thing. So it's a fine line. The civility should always be there, mm-hmm. you know, which I have found discouraging at a federal level, that the civility is gone.
Right.
And in some instances, you see some tempers flare in Juneau, not near as much because people, you all know each other pretty well. But it's a fine line on where do you say, here's what I ran on. Here's who I said I was. I've got the vote to try to move this idea forward. I think it's good for Alaska. And then to get beat up saying, well, you're just, you know, this lousy Republican, you're shill for this or that or the other thing. But I thought it was the best thing for Alaska moving forward. Should I have watered it down to make Eric happy? Is he going to do that on his issue for me when he's got the votes to do? He's got 30 people that agree with him.
Probably not.
It is a hard thing, and the public, that's the way the process works. You know, the worst system in the world, except for all of the others type thing. So I'd like to be curious to hear Eric's take on that. Is where does the partisanship enter into?
Well, and the fact is, if you've got the votes, you're not going to go out and get more, right? And we don't. Nobody likes log rolling or deal making, but really, that's part of what bipartisanship's all about. Is when you need to compromise and work something out. Eric, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think I completely agree, but that's not really what that people are complaining about, I don't think. If you have the votes, which, as I remember, you usually did, then it's fine for you to push it to a vote.
You weren't there my last 2 years.
Okay. I would love to see that. If you have a film, I'll watch it. But it seems so pushing through when you have the votes, that's fine. Compromising when you don't, just to the extent that you need to, it makes sense. There were times when I knew I could have 40 votes on the floor, but it wasn't going to get to the floor because a Democrat had sponsored it, that I had to roll it into a friendly Republican's bill. Did that maybe with Ralph. I know with Fred a couple of times. I mean, so that kind of thing doesn't make as much sense to me. But the extension is not doing things that you know are good or doing things that you know are bad simply for an electoral result. And that's where I think it crosses the line.
Or because the other guy suggested it, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And that kind of, or a personal animosity and a personalness to the policy matters that doesn't have to be there. You know, there's a rule on the House floor that you're not supposed to even mention the other person. And it gets to this weird thing where you have to not say, you know, Representative Samuels, but the
my
member
friend
from,
yeah, to my left.
Yeah. You have to use code words, but it's all for a good reason, which is it's really not about him, right? It's about the idea. So the more you stray into talking specifically about the sponsor, Rouse Samuels, the more you ought to have danger signals that that's not where you need to be. Talk about the bill, talk about the thing, and there's very little reason is the purpose of that real that rule to even be talking and saying his name. And so they sometimes take the rule and not the thought. So it's like the member on my left is an idiot. Doesn't help. You know, you've not said their name, but you're still making the same mistake. But
so we're going to have to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Senator Begich on with us to talk about how the federal election affects Anchorage, and I'll have my two guests in the studio, former state reps Eric Croft and Ralph Samuels, can participate in that conversation too, and you can participate by calling 550-8433. We're going to let Senator Begich have his piece, but you can sort of get in after him. And email is a great way to get on the show too, hometownalaskapublic.org. So we'll be back with you in just a minute with more of Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
And we're back. Charles Wolforth, Hometown Alaska, and we're talking about the election and the impacts of the voting that took place yesterday. And now I'd like to welcome Senator Mark Begich to the air. Senator?
Hey, how are you doing, Charles?
I'm doing great. I was I for one, like maybe 43% of Alaskans really enjoyed the statewide nationwide election results last night. We have the same president, and I assume you're happy about that, and you've developed relationships there, and you also have a larger Democratic majority in the U.S. Senate, which was a bit of a surprise.
It was, but I'll tell you, you know, I focused personally on three elections in the lower 48. One was Indiana, North Dakota, and then my friend Senator Tester from Montana, and those are the three that I focused on. One, Indiana. Joe Donnelly, who won there, is a pro-Anwar supporter. He's actually voted for it in the House, so I was glad to see him now coming over to the Senate. And Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, strong energy supporter. She'll be great for Alaska in a lot of ways. And then, of course, John Tester, who's been great in a lot of ways with veterans and Indian health care and many other things for Alaska. So the two pickups were a little surprise, but I think, you know, what people rejected was this kind of secret money campaign that was going on, and people just thought about the elections and voted for the people.
So it was getting a little lonely there as a Blue Dog Democrat, and you picked up a few friends who could maybe line up with you on energy issues, you know, with Republican support when some of those things come up. Is that correct?
That's good. That's a good point. And actually, I've been making calls today to the Republicans that also won their elections, congratulating them, and then also talking about what we can do together on energy. But picking up someone like Joe Donnelly and Heidi Heitkamp, and then augmenting it with Mary Landrieu, myself, Joe Manchin. I think Tim Kaine, because Virginia has OCS development now, has shown interest in that issue. Senator Warner has shown interest. So I think, you know, we're slowly breaking through, but to get some of those more moderate Democrats in the caucus will help for the cause of Alaska, and that's a good thing.
Do you foresee any changes in organization that would affect Alaska? I know that you've been a member of the leadership there. Is there any possibility of you getting additional committee memberships or positions that would change that would impact us?
Well, obviously, you know, it looks like they'll still retain me, even though I sometimes, more than often, not necessarily agree with the National Democrats, but they're going to keep me in leadership, the head of the Steering and Outreach Committee, which is the committee of all the chairs, and then the other, you know, I chair the Ocean Subcommittee. But the interesting part is in Armed Services, I'll move up at least, it looks like, 5 spaces, which gives me an opportunity to chair a subcommittee there in Armed Services, which is critical for Alaska. And seniority, I think I'll be now 69 or 70, moved up 30 spaces in less than 4 years. So the new opportunity clearly looks like in Armed Services, being a chair of a subcommittee there, that obviously will have jurisdiction over a lot of issues of Alaska. But we'll still see. We're having conversations now of things that I think are important for Alaska and how I can play a role. And we'll see. But at this point, they're not kicking me out of leadership, even though I disagree with them more than they probably like. But that's okay.
I think Eric Croft has a question.
Well, sure. Cinder, great to have you. Two questions, really. Wondering about what you see happening on the budget cliff we're facing, and also kind of the update on the North Slope developments with Shell in particular. Those are exciting for the economic development here in Alaska and how they're progressing.
Absolutely. First off, on the fiscal cliff, I think we'll get to some process here that will have a mini package of some sort. We recognize we've got to have some certainty laid out. It doesn't mean we have to have a solution 100%. We've got to have a process that says here's the things we're going to do over the next 3, 4, 5, or 10 years, whatever it is, and create certainty to the marketplace. So I feel like we can get there, maybe some continued tax relief for the middle class, not for the people making over $1 million a year. Making sure some business incentives are still in place. But it would be a short package, but one that I think gives some certainty. The second, Arctic development's moving forward. You know, the question is no longer if it's going to happen, it's how we manage it. Shell had some struggles this year, but they're ready next year. They've done the first phase of drilling. Statoil and Conoco are gearing up. And I think we have some great opportunities in the near future here. And it's going to be thousands and thousands of jobs for Alaskan. So far, so good in that range, but we got some more work to do there.
It sounds like you're in a playground there, and I'm wondering if you're keeping a good eye on your son, Jacob, or if he's going to go down the slide backwards while you're talking to us.
No, there's a soccer practice. Okay. And he's out there kicking it away, and
all right.
It's 38 degrees outside in Washington, but I'm happy to make this call and have a conversation with you guys while I'm watching him be successful.
All right, good. So I guess you've got 2 years before you're up, and you know, in the way we do elections in this country, I imagine you're going to start running hard pretty much right away. Is that true?
That's true. I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing, working hard. You know, I travel quite a bit, as you know, throughout Alaska, but we're already raising money and getting ready. We don't know who our opponent's going to be, but the fact is, I expect that we'll be number 1, 2, or 3 target in the nation, and we'll just work hard and keep focused on what we were doing. We're opening up the Arctic when people said it couldn't happen, making sure the mining industry continues to grow as, again, it's happening, making sure our military is taken care of and our veterans. And I'll just focus on the issues we've been working on and getting results for Alaskans. But you bet, Charles. There's no...
There's no break.
There's no breather right now. They're coming, and I'm getting prepared and work hard.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for being with us, Senator Begich. Enjoy the soccer game.
Absolutely. Have a good day, you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
I'm going to go now to Thomas, who's calling from Anchorage. Thomas?
Good afternoon. The simple thing that I thought was most important, there's been so much commenting about the Citizens United and its negative impact, and I think that the ultimate, I guess, result of this first election since then is it made almost no real impact, and that perhaps that's the whole point, is that people are smart enough to actually look beyond a group and see who's advertising for it, like any issue. But I think that something like the running that KKM does, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I think that if we had Michael Carey doing the presidential debates, we might have actually had commentary as opposed to the comedy that was those 3 debates. And so, you know, 2 things that can be said is, one, support something that's as educational as beneficial as running. I watch debates about people that I have no idea where their district is because they're not in my district. But it shows you who runs and why. And so seeing something that was run professionally and that was on target is a bonus, and maybe that's why we do get the quality of candidates that we get here.
Okay, Thomas, that's a good point. Let me go to an email, and I think this is a good one to address to you, Ralph Samuels. This person who I guess is listening to us online from Fairbanks, Obama is as far left as George H.W. Bush. H.W. proposed a health care system very similar to Obamacare, raised taxes, was reluctant to invade Iraq, had a pretty strong environmental record, etc. It's the Republicans that have moved to the extreme right in general. Democrats have also moved right from the 60s. I mean, do you see that point? You're comparing Obama in terms of his liberalism with Johnson, but really the Republicans have moved rapidly to the right and maybe moved even right of somebody like you, yes?
In my view, and nationally, setting aside Alaska, and we've got a unique economy, we're different. I think the Republicans are different, the Democrats are different. But nationally, I think that the public has changed quite a bit, and it showed in this election quite a bit. Is as a Republican, I look at it as a pretty moderate businessman who gets beat pretty soundly, but what I consider, you know, with all due respect to Thomas, I consider him pretty left of center. If you look at what the EPA is doing, and that does play, what's the EPA doing up here with an emissions control area, with what they did with NPRA, it's a lockup of lands. You know, it's you know, God, I'm going to say something and your emails are going to explode, the Solyndra. I mean, those types of things where you're moving towards things which aren't based to me on sound economics, these policies of this massive engine of the federal government that keeps rolling down the road. And I think that the public, if you look at the economy of the United States, if you're moving more towards the government not being something that when I need it, I will go to it for my safety net, as opposed to now it's going to be the mother of all things, I think the country has changed. And I think it showed last night, where you didn't have a Rick Santorum. This wasn't a Rick Santorum and Barack Obama. This was Mitt Romney. He's just a business guy. And he got beat pretty soundly. So I think I would just disagree with somebody who doesn't say that President Obama leans pretty far left. In my view, he compared to a Bill Clinton, let's say. Bill Clinton was a practical centrist, and I think that President Obama leans far more left than Mr. Clinton does.
We could debate that for a long time.
Probably
I can see that Eric wants to, but I want to bring another guest on the air. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. In the studio with me, former state reps Eric Croft and Ralph Samuels. And now I'd like to invite U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski on with us. Senator Murkowski?
Hey there, Charles. Good to be with you. I caught a little bit of the tail end of the conversation here. Good discussion this morning, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're calling it our local political junkie show.
Well, that about sums it up, right, Ralph?
Yes, it is.
we were just talking with Senator Begich a few minutes ago about the Democrats picked up a few seats in the Senate. Also picked up some seats in the House of Representatives, so that didn't seem too significant. Does your job become more difficult on Alaska issues with the same president having some kind of mandate and with Democrats stronger in the Congress?
Well, the concern that I have is just kind of looking at the landscape in the Senate this morning. It would appear to me that you have lost some of the moderates on both the conservative and the liberal side, and you have replaced them with more with stronger conservatives and perhaps stronger on the liberal side as well. So the anxiety that I have this morning is that the polarization that we have seen in the Senate of late may become even more polarized, and if that's the case, the gridlock that we have seen may be repeated. If that's the case, that is not good for Alaska. It's not good for the country. I really hope that I am wrong on this. But my initial just kind of assessment this morning is this could make it more difficult for a state like Alaska. And then with a second term of the Obama administration, we've kind of seen what the first term will yield. I'm concerned that it's not only going to be more of the same, but more regulations coming at us that could, I think, hinder or restrict our ability to access more of our own resources, So I'm concerned about how we move forward in this second term.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with a changed Senate that perhaps might not be as efficient a working body as we would like.
Well, hopefully it won't be any less efficient. I mean, in terms of the
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You would think that you couldn't get any worse. It's not good for the country if we get in a worse place. And this is where I think it makes it a position like mine, where I am in the more moderate camp, have been trying to bridge some of those differences. I think it makes it a little bit difficult, but I think it makes it all the more important that we attempt to build those bridges and try to work through some of the issues. 4 years is a long time for a state like Alaska to feel like they're not being able to advance on some of the concerns that they have.
So yeah. Now, Senator Begich,
how we work with this administration.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Senator Begich made the point that some of the Democrats that were elected in some of the more conservative states, and he brought up Heitkamp in North Dakota, and of course Tester was reelected in Montana. And could these sort of blue dog, stronger contingent of those folks be helpful for Alaska on energy issues, or is that just too small of a group in the Democratic Party?
We hope that they will be of help. I think both of them understand those issues, but again, you're going to have a second term of an administration that I think is going to be looking more to how they can satisfy some of the more liberal elements of their party, because I think there are many who say, well, first go around, you didn't listen to us, and so there will be increased push to perhaps go further to the left. Will people like Heidi Heitkamp and Tester feel the need to go there? I don't know. And then when you look at some of the others that have come, that will be coming on, Warren out of Massachusetts, pretty progressive there. So.
Mm-hmm.
What will the tilt of the Democratic majority look like? I think we're going to find that out pretty soon.
Yeah. Let me turn to Ralph Samuels for a question.
Yeah, thanks. And good to hear from you here, Senator. In the lame duck or in the next Congress, as you look at what the role of the EPA in particular, that one agency, the things that they've done in Alaska from the emissions control area, and you know the Pebble Mine study, and no matter what you think of these issues, to me it has always been that should have been the role of the Congress. You're the voice of the people of the United States, and you should be setting those policies. And it seems this agency is run amok almost. And do you see any bipartisan support for just curtailing the actions of an agency like that, where it becomes the role of the Congress and you can have a debate on these issues amongst the representatives of the people? Or do you think that as the agency goes forward, if Congress doesn't act through this gridlock, that they just tend to become little fiefdoms and off they go? Do you see any answer to that? Do you agree with that, and do you see any answer to that?
Well, I think we have long known that some of the things that can hold back a development state like Alaska, not necessarily legislation that we debate and duke it out on the floor of the Senate or the House, it comes in the way of regulations that you just wake up one morning and boom, they're there, and not even an opportunity for comment period because you didn't know what was going on. It's kind of this legislating through regulation, I think. That concerns an awful lot of folks out there, and we've seen it play out time and time and time again in our state. So how do you get it in check? There's very limited tools in the toolbox. You've got the appropriations tool where you say, well, okay, no funding to the agency. That's not always the right answer. I think we recognize that because we need the agencies to do their job. What we don't want them to do is overreach into somebody else's job, is to go beyond their areas of authority or jurisdiction. And I think this is some of the concern that Alaskans have expressed to me. We do have some mechanisms. The Congressional Review Act allows us to effectively veto regulations, but only within a very, very specified time period after the regulations have been promulgated. So it's a very limited tool in that toolbox. So I am concerned. I am concerned about what may come our way, not necessarily through legislation, but through the back door, through regulation. And again, our ability to weigh in is more limited than we would like.
All right. Well, Senator, thanks so much for being with us. I know you were in Fairbanks and you had a very busy schedule, and I appreciate your coming on with us at very short notice.
Glad to be with you, and I'm sure these conversations will be continuing for a lot longer than just this afternoon.
Yeah, always, always. This is Alaska. That's it. Politics is what we do instead of professional sports.
Well, and you know, when the weather gets colder, this is it. We're all inside. What are we doing?
That's right.
It's political Olympics.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And now we've had a caller who has been waiting for quite a while, and I think he wanted to talk to Senator Begich. I don't know if you're still there. Kevin from Girdwood?
Yes.
Oh, please go ahead with your comment.
I'm just an Irish Catholic independent and very happy that we are such a small state and we have both Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski, who we love. And I wish to ask both of them to try so hard to bring our troops home. I'm a former school teacher in the Peace Corps, so my bias is the best way for the U.S. to be internationally respected is to support peace. And that means bring our troops home. The second item is for Senator Murkowski, and we hope that she and Senator Begich will support, even though they don't like the EPA, we don't want guys from Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana regulating what we do for oil development in Alaska. That's all.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, the military comes up a lot on this show. It's easy for those of us who are civilians to forget what a huge yes. part the military has and how important that is for our national representatives, our senators, and our representative. And yet it's sort of in state politics, folks get reapportioned to have those bases, but I'm not sure they really have any role in state politics. So I'm interested, Eric, when you were involved locally, was the military an important issue for you? And how do you see politicians sort of interacting with the military?
I think it's important for the entire state, and we need to keep reminding ourselves of the sacrifice they make. And it still has a huge impact on our lives, on our freedoms, and on our economy. So you'd find broad bipartisan support. When I was talking before about, I had an idea on helping military Senator or Representative Thomas, who that was the big surprise, I think, of for me of last night is Representative Thomas down there in Southeast, but was able to pick up that and pull it forward. No, I think it's we need to keep reminding ourselves to honor that sacrifice.
Yeah. Now, we didn't really get into the state house races, and you guys are both state house experts.
Yeah. apparently not.
Or at least former state house experts. If we have actual currently serving people on the air, they might not be totally candid. But we have you guys, and we know that you can level with us.
that was a setup.
In Anchorage, we had a race where Patty Higgins, the former chair of the Democratic Party, took on Charisse Millett, who is a conservative Republican and had some public troubles. They talked about the Love Caucus, this issue where she'd been kicked out of the Republican majority for a while. Eric, were you surprised that Patty was unable to win that race, or was that another reapportionment issue for you?
Well, some reapportionment. It's a tough district, I think, but also just Charisse, well, had those problems, well-known in the district and well-liked. So it was both a district that fits her and that she fits pretty well and is going to be – she's going to have to apparently do more than that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric, when I first got elected, you know, Eric Croft, actually, and I specifically remember him telling me this, is generally speaking, the people that are elected fit their district. And we all know, all of us political junkies – there's a little red flag that goes up. You're going, oh, there's a Republican and a Democrat district, and there's blood in the water. I mean, on day one, and there's a Democrat and Republican district. And pretty much she fits the district. And I don't think her district probably changed that much in reapportionment. It, generally, it's going to be a Republican seat. And I was surprised how close it was. But you did have the former chair of the Democratic Party who's probably got some name ID. So
that's one of those ones where somebody takes on somebody that, that is pretty safe and they, they get beat back. And we don't see a lot of those races because we have, unfortunately, I consider a really large number of unopposed races, including unopposed races where there's no incumbent, which is really a sign of a overwhelmingly gerrymandered district. When you've got when it's an open district and political neophyte is unopposed.
Ralph and I are against unopposed races unless it's our own.
I never had one.
Did you never?
You would have enjoyed it.
I would have had it once, the last time.
Pete Peterson, Lance Pruitt race, very very close. Less than 100 votes. Looks like that could flip. Ralph, do you have a read on that particular race?
You know, the folks that I've talked to that have looked at the absentees that are coming in saying that if once again, you can people smarter than me can look at who requested them, are they super voting Republicans or super voting Democrats, people that, that cut and slice and cross-tab this thing to death say that the absentees are probably split Pruitt's way, and he's going to be safe. He's got a 100-vote lead, and he'll probably expand a little bit. So I think he's probably safe.
Both two good campaigners. I mean, that you had good campaigners shoved into a district that slightly favored Pruitt, but both ran great races.
And in limited time, we have left, Eric, Dick Traney and Andy Josephson. Dick has been around forever on the Assembly numerous times. Andy running for the first time beats him convincingly. What's the story with that race?
Yeah, and I've known Andy all my life. We were friends in high school, and he was at my wedding and stuff. But I think he ran a very good campaign. And Dick has this problem that, you know, he's, he runs from sort of both ends, or at least against a Democrat or a Republican here. And so it's, I think people had a hard time figuring sort of what the real Traney was. Or and so that I think that that may have contributed to it.
And maybe an energy difference, too, in terms of how hard they ran. It looked like Andy was running really hard, and Dick maybe didn't raise all that much money.
Yeah, which at the beginning you thought this is going to be a really tight one. And then it did seem like there was an energy difference, I think you're right.
Well, I've enjoyed this a lot. Believe it or not, the hour is already over. It's been a good one for me because I love talking about this stuff, and I hope you listeners have enjoyed it. You can continue the conversation on Facebook. It's Alaska Public, and you can also come to our website at alaskapublic.org and find today's show, which is under the Alaskan Political Junkie, and make comments there at the end of that page using Facebook. So I want to thank my guests, Eric Croft, Ralph Samuels, both served the state well, the Alaska State House of Representatives, which is a true service and one that we appreciate. Next week on Hometown, join host Shelley Wade. She'll do a program on co-housing. And Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. So long.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.